Okay, good morning everybody.
So what are various fundamental properties of powders? Size, shape, number, surface area and volume. Okay, so among those, size and surface area are very, very important. So last time we have seen about size and size distribution. So how particle size distribution can influence various powder properties we have seen. So today we will be seeing it surface area of a powder. So how surface area of a powder material can influence various properties of powder. So what is a major property that is mostly influenced by surface area? So generally surface area can influence absorption, bioavailability. So once absorption is influenced, obviously bioavailability will be influencing. So bioavailability. So if bioavailability of a drug is less, how it will influence the dose? If a drug has high bioavailability, suppose you take tablet dosage forms and parenteral injections. Generally, the dose of an injection is comparatively less than tablet dosage forms because tablets are poorly bioavailable. That itself indicates that generally if bioavailability is more, you can reduce the dose of the drug. Okay, so if bioavailability is varying, it influences the dose. So these are all interrelated properties of a powder material. So a physical property such as surface area can influence therapeutic efficacy by varying absorption or by varying bioavailability. If a drug has high surface area, how it is related with various physical properties such as flow? Suppose how surface area can influence flow property of a powder material. Now generally when surface area is high, what is the relation between surface area and surface free energy? Surface area and free energy. And what is the relation between surface area and size of the particle? So these kind of questions are mostly asked. So let us take about the influence of size on surface area and how surface area can influence flow as well as how surface area can influence absorption. Suppose you imagine a brick, okay? It has four sides, okay? So four surfaces. Suppose you take this duster. So how many surface you have? What do you mean by a surface is basically when two phases are involved, if one of the phase is a gas, then it is called as a surface. Okay, if either of the phases, none of the phase is gas, then we call it as an interface. So if you see this duster, around this duster there is air, that means gas and solid. So this is called as a surface. Suppose if you see between my hand and the duster, can you see the boundary between my hand and duster? You can clearly see the boundary. That means this is a solid, my hand is a solid, so we have an interface. Okay, so how many surfaces you have? One surface, two, three, four. So like this you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. We have six surfaces. Now like this here, if you see unidimensionally, we have four surfaces. Let us imagine we have four surfaces. So whenever you are calculating area, you are measuring the length of these surfaces. Suppose if I break this into two halves, what happened to size of the material? Decreased. What happened to number of surfaces? Now you can clearly see that the number of surfaces is doubled when you have break the particle into two halves. Now if you further break the particle, what is happening to the surfaces? Surface area is increasing. Now, is there any change in weight of the material? If you take this duster and break into individual pieces, is there any change in weight? There is no change in weight. But is there any change in area? Yes, there is a change in area. So when you reduce particle size, there is no change in weight. There is no change in volume, but there is change in surface area of the material. When the surface area is more amount of material can interact with each other. Surface free energy. Free energy, what happened to the free energy? Free energy levels are increasing. Now, how free energy levels are increasing is, whenever you reduce particle size, you are supplying energy, right? You take a powder material and you are grinding it. When you are grinding it, you are how this is possible? By supplying energy to the system, it is breaking into individual pieces. So you are supplying free energy to the system. So the free energy of a system will increase. Okay. Now when the number of surfaces is increasing, the surface free energy is increasing. What happens to surface tension? More surface area, more surface tension. Right? More surface area, more surface tension. Now we have single piece of duster. If you break into individual pieces, the surface areas will increase. Weight remains constant, but surface free energy and surface tension will increase. Okay? So when you decrease particle size, what happens to surface tension? Surface tension will increase. When there is increase in surface tension, do you think the system is stable or unstable? The system is highly unstable. Okay, so a thermodynamic stability is achieved by reducing the surface tension. In your 10th class or 8th class textbooks, you would have read that water acquires spherical shape because of its surface tension. Okay, water drops acquire spherical shape because of its surface tension. Now, why they acquire spherical shape is to reduce the overall surface tension, because a sphere has the least possible surface area. Right, a sphere has the least possible surface area. When you have the least possible surface area, what about surface tension? The least possible surface tension, right? So least possible surface area is available in spherical shape. So obviously, any system to attain thermodynamic stability, they acquire a spherical shape. Generally, there is a question in GPAT. In general, at CMC, surfactants acquire dash, so a spherical shape. Why they acquire spherical shape? Now any system by itself, it is acquiring spherical shape is to reduce overall surface tension. Okay, if you are reducing area, your surface tension will decrease. Now because of decrease in particle size, what is happening to surface area? Surface area is increasing. So surface area increasing, what is happening to surface tension? Surface tension is decreasing. The system is thermodynamically unstable. At the same time, when surface area increases, what happens to frictional forces? Increases. Let us give you a simple example. Now generally, if you are very much aware of bikes, so generally when you put a bigger tire, your mileage will come down. Right? When you put a bigger tires, your mileage will come down. Why? Why? Because you have more frictional force because of more contact area. Right? And your engine has to work more, it consumes more fuel. So generally when the contact area is increasing, surface area is increasing, the contact area increases, the frictional forces will increase. So obviously, due to high frictional forces, what happens to the flow of a material? The flow will decrease. Always remember one thing. When size is increased, surface area is decreased. When size is decreased, surface area is increased. These two are inverse relationships. So please make a note. Size and surface area are inverse relationships. Size and surface area are inverse relationships. A decrease in particle size, increases surface area. Increases surface area. Now if you see, suppose you take water and a big block of sugar. Okay. Now you take one more beaker containing water and the powder of this block. So you have taken sugar crystal. And you have in one you have powdered the sugar crystal and you have added to this. Now which part will immediately form solution? Now generally when you have sugar crystals, it will rapidly dissolve. Why this is dissolving rapidly? Because of more surface area. So when you have more surface area, how dissolution of a product is influenced? More surface area, more dissolution. If it is rapidly dissolved, it is rapidly absorbed and it is bioavailable. Now, how surface area and size can influence bioavailability is, if there is decrease in size, there is increase in bioavailability. But if there is decrease in size, how flow is affected? See, there are two things. Decrease in particle size increases absorption and bioavailability. Decrease in particle size, how it will influence flow property? Flow will decrease. So you can see the relation now. If there is decrease in size, there is decrease in flow. If there is decrease in size, increase in absorption. Now you can see that flow and absorption are inverse relations because size affects it. So size is directly proportional to flow. Size is inversely proportional to absorption. Now if you want to increase bioavailability, you can reduce particle size, but flow of the material is influenced. So you have poor flow property. So to increase flow property, what we are doing? We are going for granulation. Why we do granulation in preparation of tablets is because of high low particle size, there is high surface area, and obviously there is poor flow property. To increase flow property, you are increasing particle size. If you increase particle size, what happens to absorption and bioavailability? They will decrease. So what we are trying to do is we are trying to optimize the size so that flow is not influenced as well as the absorption is also good. That is where we have to go for particle size distribution. You have to know what percentage of particle size is available in which range. By taking an idea of this, I can correlate my size with absorption as well as flow. So the pharmaceutical technology majorly used here is by studying micromeritics, you can formulate a uniform. Now generally flow is influenced. What tablet property is influenced if it is poorly flowing? So there is a weight variation, there is content uniformity. If there is weight variation, total dose is decreasing. So obviously your tablet will not give good bioavailability. So I have to optimize my size parameter so that I can get a good flow and a good absorption. This is called as optimization of suitable particle size. So generally, the surface area is highly influential, which can influence flow property of a material as well as absorption of a material. So this is the basic concern. And the physics involved in studying surface area and size. Now let us see why we are studying surface area, in what kind of formulations surface area determinations are highly important. Now surface area determinations are highly important especially for suspension dosage forms. This is a GPAT question, please make a note. Surface area determinations are highly significant for suspension formulations. Significant for suspension formulations. Now why for suspension formulations? Because if you see, now if you take a suspension, in what form the drug is present in suspension? I'm asking about the state. So solid form, right? The drug is present in the solid form, and the bioavailability of a drug from a suspension is highly influenced by surface area. That means it is influenced by size. Now if you are preparing different batches of suspension, suppose today I am manufacturing sulfamethoxazole suspension. Now after 10 days, if I am manufacturing sulfamethoxazole suspension from my company, obviously it will have same bioavailability, same assay and same other properties, right? Now if size is varying, surface area will vary. If surface area varies, you will have batch to batch variation. So, to identify, to maintain batch-to-batch consistency, surface area determination of a powder is a major tool for formulation of suspension. Generally, if you see tablets, batch-to-batch variation can be identified by friability test, disintegration test, and dissolution test. But for suspensions, what is the major parameter that can maintain consistency and bioavailability is surface area determination. So this is the formulation where regularly surface area is determined for a given powder material. So we have to know for a suspension how we are going to determine surface area and what are the instruments used. So basically, if you see the old question papers, most of the questions from surface area are based on the physics involved, not about the instrumentation much. So what is the physics involved, you have to remember, is the relativity between surface area, size, flow and absorption. Okay, so let us confirm once more about the relativity. How size is related to surface area? Size is inversely proportional to surface area. Okay, how surface area, how size is related to flow? Directly related to flow, because if size increases, flow increases. If size decreases, flow decreases. Okay, how surface area is related to absorption? It is surface area decreases, absorption increases, that means inversely related. So surface area is inversely related to absorption. Now size also, how is size related? Size is decreasing, absorption is increasing. Okay, so this is the relativity you have to maintain. Now one more point about surface area. The determinations of surface area are very significant in formulation of suspensions, because the bioavailability of a drug is highly influenced by the surface area and the size of the dispersed phase, which is nothing but the drug. Okay, now let us see the determination of surface area. Now if you understand this principle of surface area and interrelativity, you can easily understand the chapter of interfacial tension, interface surface phenomenon. Okay, so there are two methods in determination of surface area. The first method is adsorption method and the second method is air permeability method. Now let us see about adsorption method. You have to be very familiar with the process of adsorption. So it is basically a surface phenomenon. So here what we are going to study is, if a powder has more surface area, more amount of adsorbate will adsorb. So now here the powder which you want to test for its surface area is acting as a adsorbent. Okay, so the drug or the powder sample is adsorbent or adsorbate? It is adsorbent. Now the gas that is adsorbing on this powder is generally adsorbate. So now the most widely used gas is nitrogen. So this is used as a sample gas that is being adsorbed on the adsorbent or the sample powder. So more the surface area, more the surface area, more amount of gas is adsorbed onto surface of the powder material, right? So more area, more gas is adsorbed. So you are directly measuring what amount of gas is adsorbed, and that is directly proportional to the surface area of the powder material. So that is how we are going to estimate. So the instrument which we use in determination of adsorption method is referred as Quantasorb. So this is an important question. Quantasorb, the instrument which is used in determination of surface area by adsorption method is Quantasorb. So basically Quantasorb is a very simple instrument. So it consists of a pan which is made up of either platinum or gold. Okay, so the instrument is supplied with gas, nitrogen gas, at variable pressure. So there is a pressure device. So as the gas enters into the Quantasorb, we are placing certain quantity of powder material in the weighing pan. Generally we take around 1 gram of powder material, 1 gram or whatever the required sample size, we are placing in the Quantasorb, and we are allowing certain gas inside the Quantasorb. So whenever the gas is entering inside, there is only one material that can adsorb the gas, which is nothing but the sample, and obviously the gas is adsorbing upon the surface of the sample. Now you have to calculate what amount of gas, what is the molar volume of gas that is adsorbed on the powder material. So for this we take the help of Bronner-Emmett-Teller equation. So if you see adsorption, the adsorption isotherms are of 5 types. Generally the most widely used, the most simple adsorption isotherm is basically a kerf, which is a monolayer. So generally adsorption isotherms, we have 2 types of kerfs. One is, now if you can see, this is pressure and this is x by m, or molar volume of gas adsorbed per unit weight of adsorbent. Okay, now as you increase the pressure, amount of gas adsorbed will increase and it reaches a plateau level, indicating that there is only formation of single monomolecular layer. Now as you increase pressure, if you see, suppose there is increase, as you increase pressure, amount of gas adsorbed increases, and as you further increase the pressure, you can see as one more layer. So this indicating a bilayer. So this is a multimolecular film, this is a monomolecular film. So you can get 2 types of kerfs. Either it can be a monomolecular or it can be a multimolecular film. Okay, now in this, the simple adsorption isotherm is expressed by Langmuir adsorption isotherm. or Friendly-Leweck adsorption isotherm, and rest of all multimolecular isotherms are explained by Bronner-Emmett-Teller equation. Okay, so this is a very important equation, mostly widely used for multimolecular adsorption isotherms. Please make a note, the BET equation is most widely used for multimolecular layer adsorption isotherms. Now, what for you are using this equation in this experiment? We are going to calculate molar volume of gas adsorbed. From molar volume of gas adsorbed, we will calculate the surface area. So, the first quantity we require is how much amount of gas adsorbed. Now, the Bronner-Emmett-Teller equation is, so basically it is between volume of gas, pressure of gas. Generally, as you are increasing the pressure, the amount of gas adsorbed is increasing. Up to what extent you can increase the pressure of any given gas? Up to its saturation pressure. Now, why you are not applying pressure beyond saturation pressure? What happens to a gas when you are increasing pressure up to its saturation pressure? It converts to liquid. Which is called as liquefaction. What do you mean by liquefaction? This is a GPAT question. So, generally, what is the difference between condensation and liquefaction? Condensation is, if you have a vapor, if you decrease the temperature, the vapor will convert into liquid. So, this is conversion of vapor into liquid is condensation. Conversion of gas into liquid is liquefaction. Okay, liquefaction by increasing pressure. So, if you increase pressure beyond saturation pressure, the gas becomes liquid and obviously it will wet the powder material. So, the maximum pressure you can apply is up to its saturation pressure. So, you will start at pressure P and you will increase the pressure up to its saturation pressure. So, you have to take into consideration about volume of gas at normal pressure, the pressure you are applying and the saturation pressure, from which you can get the basic equation. So, equation is P by V into PO minus P is equal to 1 by VMB plus B minus 1 into P divided by VMB PO. Now here, in this equation, what the author is trying to express is, he want to know what is the relation between the P by V into PO minus P, the pressure, volume at normal pressure, and the differential pressure between saturation pressure and the pressure you are applying, versus the ratio of P by PO. So when you plot a graph between these two, you will get a straight line or the slope. Now from that you can calculate molar volume of gas adsorbed. Okay, now generally you have the terms here. So P is pressure of the gas. Now V is, please make a note of that, P is equal to pressure, V is equal to volume of nitrogen at normal atmospheric pressure. So what is the volume of a gas at normal atmospheric pressure? 22.4 liters. Okay. Where PO is saturation pressure. PO is saturation pressure. VM is equal to molar volume of gas adsorbed. B is a constant of the sample gas. So these are the terms. So P, V, PO, VM and B. So these are the five constants. Now plotting a graph between this P by V into PO minus P versus P by V into PO minus P versus P by PO. So it is basically the ratio. One will get a straight line. The intercept of the line, so wherever the straight line intercepts y-axis, the intercept of the straight line will give you molar volume of gas adsorbed. Intercept of the straight line will give molar volume of the gas adsorbed, and the slope B, slope is equal to constant B. So by taking ratio between P by V into PO minus P versus P by PO, we can calculate the molar volume of gas adsorbed from the graph. So the intercept is directly proportional to molar volume of gas adsorbed. Okay. Now, the surface area of the powder material can be calculated by following equation. Am by n, Am into n divided by V into Vm. Now here Am indicates area of each, area occupied by each nitrogen molecule. Am is equal to area occupied by each nitrogen molecule, which is equal to 16.02 into 10 to the power of minus 16 centimeter square. So this is the area, it is minus 16, don't forget minus 16. It is the area occupied by each nitrogen molecule. Now what is N here? Avogadro's number. So what is the use of Avogadro's number? It gives you how many molecules are present in one mole of a material. So how many molecules are present in one mole of a material is generally calculated from Avogadro's number. Okay. So you know area occupied by each molecule, and you know how many molecules are present in one mole of a substance. Okay. Now divided by V. It is nothing but volume of gas at normal atmospheric pressure. And you know how much gas has been absorbed, how much molar volume of gas had been absorbed onto powder. So you know how many molar volume of gas absorbed, you know how many molecules are present in each mole, you know what is the area occupied by each molecule. Suppose if there are 100 molecules adsorbed, then obviously you know 100 into each molecule area, it will give you the total area occupied by the powder material, and obviously it gives you the total area occupied by the total surface area of the powder material. Suppose you have this much surface, obviously nitrogen molecules will absorb on the surface of the powder material. Now that indicates that if you know how much area is occupied by each nitrogen molecule, we know how much area is occupied by each nitrogen molecule. We also know how many molar volumes of nitrogen gas has been absorbed from the Brauner-Emmett-Teller equation, that is Vm, which is nothing but Vm. We know how many moles of gas has been absorbed. We know how many molecules are present in each mole, right? Suppose I have 0.1 molar volume of gas has been absorbed, we can able to calculate how many molecules are present in 0.1 mole. Right. Now each molecule occupies this much space, then this many number of molecules occupies how much space? Okay. Divided by volume of gas at normal atmospheric pressure. We have to consider the volume at normal atmospheric pressure also into the total molar volume of gas at zero. Now from this we can directly estimate the surface area of the powder material. Okay. So generally we have quanta sharps which can directly calculate all these expressions. Once you place the powder inside the instrument and you keep on, you have to vary the pressures. So once you vary the pressures, the instrument will directly deliver you the surface area of the powder material. The important things that you have to remember in terms of GPAT is, what is the name of the instrument, right? The name of the instrument is quantasar. Now what adsorption isotherms are generally obtained? Generally, we are obtaining multi-molecular adsorptions. Generally, these adsorption isotherms, the calculation of surface area is based on Brauner-Emmett-Teller equation. You should remember the name of the equation, okay? Because we have different adsorption isotherms, different equations. So, generally, the surface area of the in calculation of surface area of a powder, the adsorption isotherm expression that is used is Brauner-Emmett-Teller expression. Okay, that is what you have to remember. Sometimes they might also ask you about the formula. Okay, so which of the following is an expression for Brauner-Emmett-Teller equation? Okay, so these are the things about adsorption method. So in adsorption method, you are directly estimating the surface area of a powder by calculating molar volumes of gas adsorbed upon the surface, because amount of gas adsorbed is directly proportional to surface area. Please mention that point. The surface area is directly estimated from molar volume of gas adsorbed, as the phenomenon of adsorption is a surface phenomenon and amount of adsorption is directly proportional to surface area. Okay, so the next method is air permeability method. So the instrument we use here is Fisher subsieve sizer. So what is the principle here is, if there is more surface area, there is more resistance offered by the powder towards the flow of a material, and generally there is, it is, the resistance applied is directly proportional to surface area. As I said, more surface area means more area. So generally when a material is flowing, suppose you take a sieve, when you take a sieve and when you are filtering something through this sieve, obviously as the filtration occurs, if as the process of filtration is continued, what happens to the rate of filtration? So go back to your filtration theory. How rate of filtration is influenced? Rate of filtration is influenced based on resistance to flow increases if there is less, more surface area or less pore size. Less pore size, more resistance. Generally, if the particle size is decreased, what happens to the porosity? Particle size decrease, if particle size is decreased, the packing is very close, compact, right? If you take a fine material is more compactly packed, okay? The total overall voids will decrease, okay? So, as the voids decreases, as the space decreases, what happens to the flow of any material through that will decrease. So, generally when a material is coming with certain speed and when it is crossing through a powder bed, its resistance to flow or its decrease in velocity depends on the surface area of the material. So you are directly calculating what is the change in velocity when a material is moving from without pressure to with pressure. So generally in Fischer subsieve sizer, we are going to whichever the sample material we want to estimate for surface area, we are going to make it into a compact plug. Now generally you take a normal chalk piece, okay? So generally you take a powder, it will have porosity. When you compress chalk piece, it will have a capillary. So all these pores are aligned and it forms a capillary material. When you dip chalk piece into water, can you see a capillary action or not? When you dip chalk piece into water or any dye solution, you can see water rising through the capillaries. So generally it is a capillary action. Okay, now generally this capillary action indicates that the presence of pores is aligned and it forms a capillary. When air is flowing through these capillaries, the velocity of decrease in air depends on the size of the capillary, and its size decreases with increase in surface area. More surface area, less capillary size, that means more resistance to flow. So the basic thing you have to remember in air permeability method is, the principle here is, more resistance is offered. Please make a note of that. In air permeability method, the resistance to flow of a material, of a fluid, the resistance to flow increases with increase in surface area, which causes decrease in velocity. Okay, so here when a gas is coming with certain pressure, so generally what happens to pressure when there is more resistance? Now generally when there is more resistance, what happens to pressure? Increases or decreases? If gas is flowing freely, there is no pressure, but because of the resistance there is no flow, obviously pressure will increase. So the pressure, initial pressure and final pressure, from which we can calculate the pressure difference. The pressure difference is directly proportional to the size. So that is how we are going to calculate in air permeability method. So if you see the basic instrument, so here it basically contains the powder for which you have to calculate the surface area. It is compacted into a plug so that it can able to form capillaries. Okay. So generally the powder is compacted and it is protected by two wooden or rubber protectors. So the purpose of this is, when air is entering with a huge pressure, it will deteriorate the structure of the powder. So obviously the air will flow freely if the structure is deteriorated. So to protect this structure, compact plug, we are going to make this into a protecting with two casings. So now this is connected to a pressure device. So here we have pressure monitors, and the air which is coming out is connected to a manometer. What is the purpose of manometer? You can calculate the pressure differences. Okay, so whenever the air will pass through this powder bed. So air is having certain initial velocity and it is flowing through the powder material. As the powder is offering resistance, there is increase in pressure or decrease in pressure? There is increase in pressure. So obviously the pressure, initial pressure and the final pressure difference will be shown on the manometer, from which we can directly estimate the surface area of the powder material. As the resistance offered increases with increase in surface area of the powder. Okay, so just make a schematic representation of this and after that you can write a small note. So initially what we have to do is we have to calculate the velocity of air. So we have to calculate the velocity of air. So V is equal to, you make a note after this diagram, when air is passed through a compact plug of powder whose surface area has to be determined, there is decrease in velocity of air and change in pressure due to resistance offered. Please underline that point. Powder plug. Resistance offered by the powder plug. The resistance is directly proportional to surface area of the powder. The velocity of air can be calculated from Poiseuille's equation, where V is equal to pi d to the power of 4. Now what does this indicate? D to the power of 4 means what diameter? I have given different diameters, right? Weight mean diameter. Okay, so here you are considering total weight of the powder material, pi d to the power of 4 into delta pt divided by 128 neta L. So what is neta? Viscosity of air or fluid flowing through. L is length of capillary. Please make a note. Neta is viscosity of air. L is length of capillary. Delta P is equal to pressure difference, change in pressure. T is time. And pi d 4 is equal to weight mean diameter of the powder material. Weight mean diameter of powder material, where you are considering the size of the particle here. Okay, now here there is no expression to calculate the surface area of the powder material. So by calculating velocity, you are going to consider the porosity also, because more porosity, less difference in velocity. Because more space, it can flow easily. Less porosity, obviously more pressure. So you have to consider porosity values as well as you have to consider the cross-sectional area of the powder plug through which the air is flowing. So as this cannot derive the surface area, we are going to use a modified Cosenzi-Karaman equation. So where you get all these equations? Poiseuille's, Darcy's and Cosenzi-Karaman equation. These three will come in filtration theories. So if you see the theory of filtration, you have Poiseuille's. These theories will define how rate of filtration can be influenced. Okay, because rate of filtration is the speed with which filtration can occur. So in modified Cosenzi-Karaman equation, we also calculate velocity by considering all other parameters also. V is equal to, please make a note, A by neta into SW square into delta PT divided by KL into EQ by 1 minus epsilon. This is epsilon. Epsilon indicates porosity. This is a symbol used to determine porosity of a material. So generally porosity is expressed in percentage. Okay. So here A is, please make a note. So this is called as modified Cosenzi-Karaman equation. Very important equation for determination of velocity of air flowing through, or to determine the rate of filtration. So here A is equal to cross-sectional area of the plug. Neta, as you all know, it is viscosity of air flowing through. This is surface area of the powder material which you want to calculate actually, into delta PT as usual, pressure difference and time. Now here the term K indicates Cosenzi-Karaman constant. and this is dimensionless Cosenz-C Karman constant. Please make a note there. Cosenz-C Karman constant is a dimensionless. So generally its value differs between 5 plus or minus 0.5. So Cosenz-C Karman constant is generally having values between 5 plus or minus 0.5. And what do you mean by epsilon cube? Cube indicates what? Epsilon is porosity. Cube indicates volume of the pore, right? Always square indicates area, surface area. Single dimension indicates diameter. Square indicates mean surface area. Cube indicates mean volume, and 4 indicates mean weight. Okay, so these are constants. So here epsilon indicates porosity and volume of the pore, because more volume, more velocity; less volume, less velocity. Now bringing the surface area here and velocity here, generally you can calculate the surface area of the powder directly from this expression. Okay, so from Cosenz-C Karman constant one can calculate the surface area of the powder material. So what is the principle in this method? The principle involved is resistance offered is directly proportional to surface area. So these questions can come in assertion and reasoning type. Okay, so this is about determination of surface area of the powder material. The next one is derived properties of powders. So this is very, very important, derived properties. So derived properties are independent properties or dependent properties? Derived properties are dependent properties. And the major derived properties, the first property is densities, flow, porosity, packing arrangement, and bulkiness. If you see densities and flow properties, we have different types of densities, because now if you see, the density generally varies with the ability of compression. So generally you take gases. Is gases compressible or not? Gases are highly compressible materials. Now do you think the density of a gas varies or not? Obviously the density of the gas varies with the pressure. Okay, so if you increase more pressure, density will rise; less pressure, density will decrease. Okay, so obviously if you see here, the densities of the powders are compressible or not? Powders are compressible. To what extent powders are compressible? Powders are compressible to very low extent. When compared to gases, powders are leastly compressible. Now what about liquids? Liquids are compressible or not? They are not highly incompressible material. So the overall principle of hydraulic is based on, because liquids are not compressible, the pressure exerted on a liquid is acting uniformly in all directions. If you exert pressure on a liquid from one side, it exerts the uniform and equal pressure on all directions. That's why when you apply pressure on a liquid, it will apply pressure on the hydraulic system.